I'm Erica Hildner. I'm 38 years old. Today is Friday, June 24th, 2022. And I'm in Missoula, Montana with my father named Richard Hildner.
And my name is Richard Hildner. I'm 76 years old. Today's date is Friday, June 24th, 2022. We're in Missoula, Montana, and I'm with my daughter, Erica.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Erica.
I'm feeling a little nervous.
So am I.
Yeah.
Would you like to ask the first question, or would you like me to?
Well, it's wild because, I don't know, I came in here with all these questions, and then this morning I found out about Roe v. Wade and just kind of... I'm just spun out about it.
We just drove, your stepmother and I, Suzanne, and I just drove down from Whitefish. It's a 2.5 hour drive. And that was all that was on the news. And it just made me ache right down to my soul for you and your generation and for our democracy and for our republic.
Yeah.
I, like you, have a list of questions, but today's Supreme Court decision, I think we all knew it was coming, but it really has hit home, and I don't know what to tell you other than I think that it is now incumbent upon us all to vote our conscience and to be active and to become even more active and passionate about what we're going to do in the future. And I just have to take a deep breath and hope for the best, but rededicate myself to doing what I can to restore us as a people, as a culture, as a father.
Yeah, I feel like I've always sort of looked to you, you know, like I remember when Trump was elected and I was all equally spun out, and I remember calling you and just crying and saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? It feels like that now, but it also seems unfair to ask you, right? I don't expect you to know, but I do love that I can ask.
I think what we're going to do is the same thing I said when we ended up with Donald Trump as our president, and that is that we have to believe in our own power and our empowerment of others so that we can create an environment that is open, loving, compassionate, understanding, and just keep fighting for what we think is right. I think that's all we can do at this point. And I know that even though Roe v. Wade is overturned, it was not unanimous. Unanimous votes from the Supreme Court are much harder to overturn than divided votes. I would like to have seen more division, of course. But on the other hand, I get hope that we have gotten ahead of our... we have a precedent in overturning Plessy versus Ferguson. Brown v. Board, you know, comes to mind as well. That eventually maybe the Supreme Court gets it right. And I still believe in the Supreme Court. They don't always get it right, and they really got it wrong this time.
Yeah.
So,
well, You did say something that actually ties into something I had written down, so we could go there.
Let's go there.
you know, you talked about creating an environment of inclusivity, and you know, we sort of are doing this StoryCorps as a joint Father's Day birthday present, because Father's Day was on my birthday this year, which I looked into it. The very first Father's Day was actually on June 19th in 1910 in Spokane, of all places.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right?
You weren't and, born then.
I wasn't. I wasn't. But I guess every 17 years we do a Father's Day birthday merge.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think the first one was I was 4. And then 21, and then here we are at 38. I think the math on that is right. So that's pretty cool. But
I'll mark my calendar
yeah.
for 17 years. Ooh, I'll be 90 something.
yeah, that math is hard. I don't know what that is. But it does make me think, like, birthdays, birthday presents. I was, you know, writing all these questions down, and the very best present I ever got. Oh, man. It's really hard to do this. thanks. it's actually from you, obviously. That's why I'm bringing it up. When you were on city council in Whitefish, you pushed really hard to get, you might have to help me out here, to get sexual orientation included in an anti-discrimination policy for the city. And I remember you got some pushback, and you got, you know, sort of put off a bit, and you kept after it, and it was a long process. And I remember you initially asked me, you know, like, do you think it's even necessary? Like, do you think things are, like, moving so quickly in the right direction that we even need to do this? And I remember saying, like, yeah, absolutely. You know, like, what it would have meant for me, you know, growing up queer in rural Montana, to have seen just on paper, you know, like, we don't do this in our city. And you, like, really heard that. And you made that happen. I remember I was living in Colorado, and you called me. And it had just gone through. And you were crying. And... And you said, you know, like, you can come home now if you want to.
Oh, boy, I don't remember saying that you could come home. You can always come home.
I know, and I know that wasn't, like, the biggest part of it, but it was, like, you know, just so you know.
Thank you, Erica.
And I was like, Jesus, my dad loves me so much. He changed a whole law for me. Like, that's a pretty big deal.
Of all the things I did when I was on city council, I think the non-discrimination ordinance was my most important work. And just before that vote on council, that night I was also, as I remember it, the acting mayor, because I was the deputy, and the mayor wasn't there. And I had talked to the police and others about the possibility that busloads of bigots might come once again to Whitefish. And I asked them and everybody just to be ready. And when I came into City Hall, it was the temporary City Hall, the new one was just under construction, and I took my seat at the dais, and the place was packed. And we called, it had to be called for a public hearing. And I asked the public to speak, to take their turn. Not one person spoke against it. And when we voted, the packed house stood and applauded. So I knew we'd done the right thing. There was no question. But you were always on my mind as one part of making, doing what we could to eliminate, codify our position, the city's position, we as a people position in Whitefish, about we will not discriminate. And whether it's based on color, sex, religion, origin, it doesn't matter. People are people.
I wish I would have been there.
I wish you had been too. I would have been able to keep it together.
Yeah, same. Clearly, we would have struggled.
Oh, boy.
Wow, sorry, I went right into...
You did. And, but that just meant a whole lot to me. I never saw it as a birthday present, but...
What was it? I mean, it wasn't on my birthday. I was just thinking, like, in terms of, like, the best gifts, that's number one.
And I'd like to think that that's, for the most part, I know I've slipped from time to time. We all have, I hope, or think, that I have lived my life treating it, everyone, with courtesy and respect. I don't know if you know that Japanese kanji, the script that's just in the off the kitchen on the high wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Japanese symbol for compassion. And I walk under it every single day. And I'm cognizant of the fact that I walk under it every day. And that gives me a responsibility to humankind. As I often say to Suzanne, everyone deserves a good morning. And when I'm running, when I'm walking downtown, wherever I go, when I meet someone, I say, good morning, no matter what their station in life. And I've always believed somewhere deep down that we all deserve a good morning.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an extension. And that just started me spinning off. You know the story of my hitchhiking by air across the country and ending up in essentially a hovel in South Chicago and knocking on that door, seeing that blue light coming through the glass of the door, and I'd been hitchhiking, and it was, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was going to get run over. The fog was so deep on Highway 66 south of Chicago, and I crawled up on this porch of this house and knocked on the door just to ask permission to sleep on the porch. And this woman who shuffled to the door said, no, you come in here. Mm. And said, you'll sleep. She told me what I was going to do. She said, you will sleep on this couch. And she turned off her television. She'd been asleep on that sofa. And she shuffled off into her bedroom in the back, and I fell sound asleep on her couch. And she saved my life. And the next morning, when she said, "You'll have breakfast with us." And her husband had come off. He worked night shifts, and he had come in seeing a stranger asleep on his sofa at 6 o'clock in the morning. And she said, "No, you'll have breakfast with us." And it was, she opened a tall can of high-C orange drink and some hash brown potatoes that came out of the freezer and 2 eggs. And that was what they had, and they shared it with me. And I said, "I have $5 in my pocket. Can I give it to you?" And she said, "No. You just do something good for somebody else sometime." And that has been with me ever since that moment. And I have tried to be kind and do something good. That's, I know I've fallen short more than once, but I think it's all in the trying.
Whew. I never heard that story.
I wasn't going to tell that story. You've heard it too many times.
No, I've never heard that one, actually.
You haven't?
Uh-uh. Oh. Nope, you never told me that one. Oh. I can provide a question that might give us a little bit of a break. I have a burning question for you.
Sure.
This is a hard left. Why did we take Pumpkin the cat to the vet every time in a pillowcase?
Oh.
Because I'll say this. The answer I got when I asked this as a kid was that she would run under the petals. But I was like, now that I'm an adult with pets, it seems really crazy to put a cat in a pillowcase and tie up the top and then tote her into a vet. there are other ways to keep a cat from running under the petals. I'm just curious if you want to explain.
I will explain
in more
that.
Detail.
when I worked for the Forest Service at Moose Creek Ranger District, which is 25 miles by trail from the end of the road to this wilderness station, there was there's a dirt airstrip. And so we got supplies either by the mule train or and horses packed in, or they would come in by air. And your mother had a cat, and we were going to fly this cat into Moose Creek in the back of this single-engine airplane. And the pilot said, "You'll have to put the cat in a bag." In this case, it was an empty grain sack. And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I flew somebody's cat once, and I was flying along, and this cat leaped out of the back seat and crawled up on the top of my head." And he said, "I got the plane landed, but never again will a cat out of a bag." So maybe that's where the expression "the cat's out of the bag" comes from. I don't know.
But then why carry that forward into our life on the ground?
Because it's a lot easier, I think, to corral a cat in a bag.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's amazing.
So that's why I insisted on a cat in a bag. And now the cat's out of the bag.
Did mom push back on that at all? Or if she
was like, no, seems reasonable. No.
Let's put the cat in the pillowcase.
Yeah.
Okay. Follow-up question. Was there a specific pillowcase that we used every time that was like the cat pillowcase, or was it...
Oh, no, any pillowcase would do.
Okay, yeah. Just whatever.
Yeah. No, it was
on
the special
top of the
cat,
stack.
Cat case.
Okay.
No.
Okay, wow. Yeah, it was really funny. I was trying to think of questions to ask you, and I was like, you know, the one thing like I really, really don't know or can guess is the answer to that one.
Well, so that answers kind of that one question that I have. Is there anything about me you've always wanted to know but never asked? But I do have a question for you. Yeah. You just turned 38.
I did.
And you're now applying to law school.
Yes. Today is the day.
And today is the day.
Yep.
And you will be a somewhat non-traditional law student, just as I was a non-traditional student in education at age 40.
Yeah.
When I went to get my teaching certificate.
Yeah.
So why now, and what motivates you to to want to take on, because your situation now is you're married to Jess.
Yep.
Jess has three children.
Yeah.
You now have three children.
I do.
This is a big step.
It's a big
step. Just like
step.
I had you and Sean.
Yeah.
When I went back to school.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to ask for your advice
on
what to expect as starting a career so late. I get what would be considered late. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've tried a lot of things.
And succeeded in them, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just feel like I want to do something that uses, you know, the whole of my brain and the whole of my heart, I think. And I think, yeah, environmental law, and largely it goes back, and I have this on my application as well. The story you told me about hiking down into the Willamette, or into the Mackenzie, and seeing these fish in like this old, was it an earthen dam or is it a concrete dam?
No, it was a concrete dam.
But largely not maintained and just sort of, you know, deep in the woods. And you had hiked down in there with Suzanne, and the Chinook salmon had been swimming back upstream to spawn. And their, you know, traditional spawning ground is further upstream than where the dam is. And you told me this, like, story that blew my mind and was devastating about these fish just smashing their faces into the wall of this dam, trying to, like, fulfill their biological imperative and being completely stopped from doing that because of something that, like, humans did and that no one's even looking at, you know, or that, like, I don't know the details of how effective that dam is for providing whatever natural resources it's supposed to be, but man, that just crushed me. Like, not being able to get back where you're from and not understanding why, and then just dying. It was a beautiful story, but it was devastating. And I thought, like, maybe there's something I can do. I'm a smart cookie. Maybe there's some way I can help.
You are a smart cookie, and I know you'll be able to help. And yeah, that dam was built, and it provides electricity for Eugene, Oregon. And that's what it's there for. I think they're working on it, by the way, to work on some fish passage, actually. Whether it's going to be successful fish passage is a difficult task at best.
Sure. Yeah, I think about that all the time. And I think part of getting older, too, is you do start to think about, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you do start to think about, you know, like, what do you want to have done? What do you want to get to the end of your life and say, this is what I helped with?
I used to tell my students when they would, you know, as I said, I didn't start teaching until I was 48. But I would often say to my students, when I'd get the giggles, and whenever I got the giggles in my class, the students would say, what's in there, Mr. Hilton? And I would say, you really don't want to know what's going on between my ears. And then I'd start a story, of course. But I would tell my students that my fondest wish for them was that they could find a job, a position, a career that gave them as much joy and pleasure as teaching has given me. And I said, if you can do that, you will be rich. Maybe not in your bank account, but you'll have a richness that's far, far beyond that of anyone. And that's what I hope for you, that you'll find a place in the law that gives you that richness, that joy, and really in helping others.
Yeah. That's the plan.
Kind of like the Lorax.
Yeah.
You have another question for me?
Oh, let me just look at my notes here. My handwriting's terrible. Well, it might be another crier, I don't know, but I feel like I'll probably, oh geez, I don't even know if I can say that. Big cry day for me. I feel like I'll probably revisit this recording when we can't talk anymore. And I'm sure there's a million things I'm gonna wish I'd asked you.
Oh, yep.
And I guess I'm just curious, like, and you don't have to share if you don't want to, but is there anything you wish you'd gotten the chance to ask your parents and didn't?
Yep. I have on my questions here. Have I sheltered you and your brother, Sean, too much from death and the discussion of it? And yes, there are things, that I wish that I had asked my father. It was just not, there was never any doubt that both of my parents loved me unconditionally. And so as a result, I never felt that I needed to discuss some of these things. But in my dresser drawer, you need to know this.
Oh, jeez.
No, because I've always wanted to transcribe them. One summer after my father had died, I was with my mother at Bird Lake in Michigan, and I had a little tape recorder, and my mother was having her morning coffee, and I sat down, and I turned on the tape recorder, and I said, Mom, we're talking. We're going to talk. And she said, well, I don't know what we wanted to talk about. And I got her to commit to tape, and I asked her some of these questions about her early life. We'll always leave this world, Erica, with leaving those behind with a lot of questions about, wow, I wish I had asked that question. So I hope through this process, you'll always grab me by the scruff of the neck and say, Dad, I want to know about this about you. What are your regrets? What was your biggest mistake? What What were your first two marriages like? All those questions. Because just because I know how sensitive you are, this may sound a little harsh. I deal with it with humor. And this new cabin we're building and things that go on in my life, I commonly now say, I'm on the 20-year plan. That makes me 96. But we all reach a stage in life when instead of counting up, we start counting down. And that doesn't frighten me at all. It makes me love you and Sean more. And I have no real knowledge to impart other than hopefully my own humanity. So there are no questions off the table at this point in my life. I remember as my mother's clock wound down, as the sand ran through the hourglass, I started counting back the years, and I would mentally and physically count on my fingers. Okay, I've got 10 here. And then it was 5. And then 4, 3. But never anything changed my love for my mother. And I never had that chance with my father. Except as he lay dying, and I reached down to kiss him, and I said, I love you, Dad. And he said, and I knew this, I love you too, big shot. And that was kind of a nickname for him that he had for me. So don't worry about it. But I think I have maybe not been as good a parent for you and Sean when it comes to, like, when I had to take our pet Bones to the vet, and I said, I have to load him up. And I came back without him.
Well, we were pretty little.
Yeah, you were, but still, I want you to know that's a screw up on my part. So.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to know that you didn't ask? Or do we save that for later?
I'll just ask you another time. I think we're about out of time.
Are we about out of time? We still have time.
We'll cruise through it. We'll go for it.
Well, you've suddenly become a stepmom to 3 children.
Yep.
When you married Jess. Is there anything about parenting that you might find helpful?
Oh, Suzanne, God, I'll take all the help I can get.
Suzanne inherited you and Sean.
I'll say this. My compassion for Suzanne is through the roof. It is really challenging to step into a family and be a parent. And it is challenging to be a parent in general, I think. And I know I didn't always give her the easiest time. And I'm really fortunate that that my 3 stepkids so far seem to be on board. but I have about 1 million parenting questions. That's a real switch you flip, right?
Your life is never the
same. It's not.
And neither is the life of the kids.
No. I do think you are an incredible example of how to be patient. And I have been trying constantly to just, whatever it is, just come at it with patience. I think you're hands down the most fantastic dad that is. Like, I hope I'm just like you. Not as a dad, because I'm not a dad, but, like, as a person. Like, you know, like, you grow up and you want to be this or you want to be that, and I just... You're my example. I want to be just like you.
Thanks. I lost my patience. I don't remember if you remember with you and Sean on the North Fork River when you were little.
Nope.
I was a single dad.
Don't remember.
And we had gone down to the river from the ranch, Foreman's Ranch, and we were just skipping rocks and playing, and we were looking at animal tracks in this really muddy area. And the more you walked out into the muddy area, the deeper you and Sean sank into the mud. And pretty soon you were up to your knees. And then you got the giggles, and pretty soon you were covered in mud. And I'm thinking, oh, we have to walk a mile uphill, and you have made a mess of yourself. And I had lost. I was going, this is awful. This. And pretty soon I wanted to say, stop it. You know, we're going to clean it. Do you know what you're doing? And then I had to take a deep breath and say, let it go. So mud is good. let them play in the mud as much as they want. It makes them grow. And you'll grow too. That's the only advice I have as a parent.
That's really good
give
advice.
Give them enough leash. And my parents were just absolutely perfect at that. And when people would say to my mother, Jean, aren't you worried about your boys? When I went off mountain climbing for a month and didn't talk to anyone at home, my parents had no idea if I was alive or dead. And my mother always said, when people would ask her, aren't you worried about your boys? She would always say, no, not really. If something goes wrong, the police will call. And fortunately, they didn't call when I did cause trouble. And here I am. I got away with, as my sister and brothers would say, I got away with murder because I was the baby.
Thanks for doing this with me, Dad.
Erica, this is the best present ever.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. Also, I love you.
I love you too.